Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Well, good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine. We're so glad you're here. My name is Lynette, along with two doctors in the house. We have Dr. Jerry Mixon.
Ta-da!
Yay! And Dr. Samira Umat.
And a very good morning to you.
Yes, yes. Oh, it's feeling like November, and in our area, the big bum cyclone was the big news, and that's a big scary word for lots of wind, power outages, trees down, et cetera. And how did you fare? How did you do, doctors?
We lost power for a couple of days.
You did. Okay.
And we still don't have internet back.
Yeah.
And our cell service is pretty spotty because apparently AT&T had a big tower go down.
Oh, boy.
So everybody is going through, you know, what they have left.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of people still affected by it. Thankfully, the office was only closed for one day. And, you know, the staff were all saying they're happy to come to work because it's warm and they have coffee.
Well, warm, coffee, and
water.
Hot showers.
Yes.
Well, they couldn't shower here, okay?
Well, they could, actually. I told a couple of our staff to come do that because they got stuck with Mr. Biden's sort of thing.
Oh,
all electric homes. So they have no heat.
Nothing.
No light. No stove, nothing. I mean, it's just a bare shelter to keep the wind and the rain off, and that's it. So, you know, I told them, hey, you know, if you're an all-electric home and you're now without electricity, and they're told they won't get it back till tomorrow sometime.
Wow.
So Tuesday to Sunday.
Woo. Yes, that's right.
Yeah, you know, we have showers in the restrooms here for a reason.
Well, but they don't have them in the clinics. The showers are only at corporate.
That's true. But, you know.
Well, I thought Dr. Mixon
upstairs can come downstairs.
Yeah, and I think Dr. Mixon just gave them your address, Dr. Umat.
That's right. So because you got a generator.
In case, you know, you had some folks knocking at your door, you know why now.
Yeah, this is not trick or treat. It's shower.
Shower, please.
Well, you know, it's been miserable. It's really been hard out there for many, many days.
And, yes.
I was surprised by it, actually, because I didn't know it was coming. Mm-hmm. And as I was leaving work on Tuesday night, they were telling me, be careful about the wind. And I said, really? And that's when I first heard that there was a bomb cyclone its way.
Yes.
It's overly dramatic.
Yes. Yeah. That and the atmospheric river. Yeah. I actually called my my buddy, Nick Walker, who used to be on the Weather Channel for many years, and wanted to talk and find out, what is this, and can you explain it? And he said, yeah, a lot of folks like to use these big terms, and they're not really supposed to unless they're on TV with the, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that you just want to scare
people. Well, they definitely grab attention, right?
Yes.
So if you're trying to get somebody's attention, you'll use the words.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, of course, we don't have a gasoline car. Mm. You know, my wife and I both drive Teslas. Mm.
That's right.
And we did not charge them to the max in advance. We should have. You know, as we put that on our list. Mm. You know, make sure you've got the candles and the emergency lights and the batteries and charge everything up. Get all your stuff charged.
Yeah.
And charge the cars because, you know, normally we charge at home. We have a charger in our garage. We just go in at night and, you know, one of us will plug it in. About once a week, we're fine. But when you got caught...
Right.
This thing.
Yes.
And the superchargers, the lines went all the way around the parking lots because nobody could charge at home and they all had to go to the superchargers.
Right.
And there's only three or four of them in the whole Seattle, you know, Seattle area here, or at least on the east side.
Mm. Okay.
And so, yeah, that became a real issue.
Yeah.
Fortunately, we did not run out of charge, but we got down to about 100 miles on my wife's, 150 on mine. So we're still doing okay.
Mm. Okay.
But yeah. Next time, if somebody tells me it's going to be
the
high
bomb
winds
cyclone,
and risk of losing power.
Yeah.
I'll charge it to 100.
That's right.
My car, that's 400 miles.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Well, and also just a reminder to have your emergency kits ready, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. They keep reminding us we live in this area where the earthquakes are a reality. So
we had everything else ready. It's just we forgot the cars.
Yeah.
Okay. So now you will add that to the list.
I've added that to my list.
Yes. Very good. Very good. All right. I'm going to give the phone number here before we dive into some other news, making headlines, find out what Dr. Mixon and Dr. You Matter doing. Here is that number to get through with your questions today. We are live in the studio, 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. Questions about your health, a recent diagnosis, perhaps some symptoms, and maybe just those symptoms of aging that we're all dealing with, because of course that's what the doctors specialize. Dr. Jerry Mixon here in the studio and Dr. Samira Umat. So doctors, what is top of mind today? Medically, or was it the bomb cyclone in our area kind of took over?
No, this morning was actually an article I read on Fox. Fox News medical articles are usually pretty good. I quibble with some of the things they say from time to time, but generally they're pretty good. But boy, they blew it this morning.
But you are one of the few physicians who probably caught it, Jerry. Most people may not even catch it.
Maybe.
Because, you know, I mean, this is something that we deal in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let me see if I can find it here.
And the point about this that I was, as Jerry's looking for it, is that, you know, sometimes when people say something wrong, it catches in the media. And when it's a catchy phrase, it takes us decades to get rid of that that conception, right?
Yes.
So, for example, when the Women's Health Initiative study was first released to the media, and then they published and said estrogen causes breast cancer, nobody's forgotten that.
They haven't. And how many years ago was that?
Decades
ago. Yes,
decades.
But the problem is, it was wrong.
Yeah.
That was a mistake. Yeah. They should never have said that.
No, they should not have. But even doctors now are still caught in that misperception, thinking that estrogen causes breast cancer. And this article kind of reflects that. Some they're talking about declining birth rates and delayed pregnancy, and that the average age of first pregnancy used to be 21 in the 60s, and now it's up to 30, and women are mostly only having one child instead of two, et cetera. So a birth rate has dropped from 118 births per 1,000 women in 1960, to 58 births per 1,000 women in 2021. So it's probably 56 or 57 now. But they were talking about the fact that breast cancer in young women is going up.
Yes.
We're seeing more and more breast cancer in young women. And so let me just read this little bit, and then I will swear and spit at them.
And yes,
I'm sorry. When people write really wrong things about medicine, which is where I live, and they put it out to tens of millions, in this case, 100 million people read Fox. Even honest people from the left look in at Fox to see what the right is thinking.
Yeah. But I think you should maybe write to them, Jerry, and tell them.
I will. I assure you, I will. Okay, anyway, the article says, research shows that having children at a younger age provides a protective effect against breast cancer. Absolutely true. Early pregnancies reduce a woman's lifetime exposure to estrogen, a hormone linked to certain breast cancers. Prolonged exposure due to fewer pregnancies or delayed childbearing can elevate the risk. That's just wrong.
Yes.
The fact is, a woman will never have a higher estrogen level in her life than she will during pregnancy. Mm. Okay, when you get pregnant, your estrogen starts going up, and it goes up every month, and it peaks at the end of the first trimester shortly before delivery. Your progesterone goes way up. Your testosterone goes way up. All three primary sex hormones are not lower during pregnancy. They're higher during pregnancy. And it's those higher sex hormones that are protecting you against breast cancer, not lower. Okay. Breast cancer for the vast majority of women is an estrogen, it's a hormone deficiency disease. Okay. When you graph out sex hormone levels and breast cancer, the lower the sex hormone levels during a woman's lifetime, the higher the risk of breast cancer. And the higher levels of estrogen, testosterone, progesterone that a woman has been exposed to during her lifetime, the lower her risk of breast cancer.
Right. That's why at menopause, the incidence of breast cancer increases because estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone levels are falling.
Yes.
And that has been documented time and time again. As hormone levels are falling, breast cancer risk is increasing.
Yes. Estrogen levels at menopause are down about 50%. Progesterone is down around 65 to 70%. And testosterone, the most protective hormone for women and breast cancer, is down 85%. Okay. And the estrogens and all of these will continue to drop. You'll be making essentially no testosterone by the time you're 60. Your progesterone will bottom out around 65. Your estrogen will hit the floor around 75. But the lower the hormones, the higher the breast cancer.
That's
right. That's all there is to it.
And what they have also shown is that if you are tending into menopause and you're aware of that, then if you start a hormone replacement therapy program within 10 years of that time, you will actually reduce your risk for getting breast yes. cancer.
And since the most protective of the three hormones is testosterone, given a woman at menopause, the levels that of testosterone she enjoyed as a teenager will lower her risk of breast cancer by 85%.
Wow.
Dramatically lower.
Again, remember, we're talking about physiological levels. We're not talking about overtreating or going very high. We're staying, stay within the normal range,
right.
but replace what is going away for function.
And the peak levels of all the sex hormones in a woman were when she was about 15 to 17 years old. Okay. That's why teenagers have so much trouble not having sex because their levels are at their highest at 15 to 17. And for most of human history, a 15-year-old was a married woman.
Mm.
You know, when she had her first period, she became a woman and the family sent her off to the man that they had decided to marry her to when she was born.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so adolescence is something we have invented over the course of the last 100 years or so. But it's not supported by our physiology, our biochemistry. So 15-year-olds have the highest sex drive they're going to have in their life. And they really struggle with us telling them don't.
Mm.
Well, and in our complex society, it's true. Girls who have babies in their teens pretty much doom themselves to economic disadvantage for the rest of their lives. Mm. So it is a good thing not to get pregnant at 15. You know, nobody get me wrong about that. I am not proposing we let our 15-year-olds get pregnant. I've told my 12-year-old that she can start dating at 30. So, yeah, all right, I am a protective father. I admit it.
he might do 29 eventually.
Maybe. Well, you know, I'll be old and feeble by then. I mean, I'll be 83 when she graduates from high school. So come on.
Okay.
Anyway, I won't be in much of a position to threaten her boyfriends by then.
That's right.
Though wow. I do like the idea, and I own guns.
Yeah.
Young men, pay attention.
That's right. So 15-year-olds, we don't want them to
We don't want them pregnant, but their bodies are screaming, you know, hey, let's have sex. And back when I was a high schooler, before birth control pills were available to teenage girls, because you had to be 21 with a doctor's prescription to get birth control pills back in the 60s. You know, 1960 was when the first birth control pills were approved, and I graduated from high school in 65. And every boy I knew was trying to figure out how to get a girl on birth control pills. But anyway, different story. I'm going to tell you, boys are boys. But the girls who got pregnant in those days would often swear, but I only did it once. And they were probably telling the truth. Because mid-cycle, testosterone, progesterone, estrogen are all at their peak. The testosterone gives the girl the desire to have sex. The progesterone or the estrogen makes her feel feminine, makes her feel like a woman. And the progesterone makes her pliable and relaxed and mellow and willing to go along with
things. Well, the progesterone will peak a little later in the cycle, Jerry. It's just estrogen and testosterone. Progesterone just rises a little bit, but it peaks later in the cycle to protect that pregnancy.
And then it drops. Well, if she gets pregnant.
If she gets pregnant.
But if she doesn't get
pregnant. Then it drops off. Then all three will drop off.
Right. So, but the peak, assuming she doesn't get pregnant, is at ovulation. Okay. And so, yeah, you get two peaks in progesterone, one the week before and one at ovulation. Okay. And so I know you think it's a smaller peak. It's enough to make a woman pliable. Right. Anyway, we all know the curves, except our audience doesn't.
All right. Should we take a break right here?
Well, I think you've been waving your arm in the air for the last minute or so. So, yeah, let's take
I'm just waving wildly over here. All right. We will be back, ready to take your questions, anxious to talk about your health with you on Leading Edge Medicine. I'm going to give you that phone number. Now is the time to get into the call queue, especially if you weren't able to get through last week. We had so many calls. Here is that number, 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with Dr. Umat and Dr. Mixon in just a moment. Stay right there. Edge Medicine with you and your questions for the doctors about your health. As we're getting older, there are things that happen that we don't understand, and we don't want to just blow it off as we're getting older, no. Right, doctors?
That's
it's
right.
Like there are things we can do to live healthy and wonderful long lives, and that's why we're here, to talk about your health, right, doctors?
Absolutely.
Okay, we're waiting for that first call. Let me give you that phone number again, 1-800-465-8770. All right.
Well, you know, it is the week before Thanksgiving, so I'm sure people have lists and shopping and things to do.
And I'm wondering, too, if there's some power outages still affecting phone lines and that type of thing.
Phone lines and... You know, people are trying to protect the batteries on their cell phones.
Right.
Because most people don't listen to us on the radio anymore.
No, they're streaming and listening.
Yeah, they're all streaming. Because I don't know anybody who actually owns a radio in the living room anymore. I mean, there must be some collectors out there.
That would be me. But they're all in another room. And
so no one listens to a radio in their home or in their kitchen anymore. It's on your device.
Right.
Nice and clear.
And so during the power outages, there was no way of getting any news.
Yes.
Right.
It was actually refreshing.
It was very quiet. It was really quiet.
Yeah.
We needed to slow down just a bit. So if you're not able to get through today, we'll understand that. But let me give that phone number, 1-800-465-8770 is the number. You want to pick a topic, doctors, and let's dive in. We are in November, so what are we facing? I know at the beginning of
cold
season.
Cold, rain.
Wind.
That's what
we're facing. Cyclones.
Yeah.
Or how about with our patients at longevity? What are some of the big questions?
Yeah. No, the clinics are busy. Everybody came yesterday for my appointments. I'd had no cancellations. Nobody missed their visits. Yeah. So it was very nice and I was very happy that they were all there. And I'm glad they were safe and they made it. But, you know, this coming week, our aesthetic girls are going to have trainings on the new laser.
Yes.
And so we're very excited about that. So this is a brand new laser for us. And Cynosure and Lutronic became one company. So this is their South Korean laser. And it is used to treat darker skin and lighter skin for any pigments and fine lines. But we bought the laser because we wanted to treat hair.
Yep.
So for people who are losing scalp hair and are experiencing thinning scalp hair, we had a program. And it was good, but, you know, younger patients did better than older people. Older people didn't do as well. It involved injections. Injections are painful.
Well, and not just injections. You're talking about 200 or more injections.
We never tell them how many.
Once
you start, it's just painful. So the point is that, you know, it was hard to do the treatment. Patients were reluctant. Obviously, once they had it, they go, okay, well, I don't know that I want this done. Some people really did amazingly well. And the best population was younger people who had had a hair transplant and who didn't want to lose the gains had made from their transplant. They did amazingly well.
But the biggest problem we had was the number of injections we had to do.
Yes.
Because people don't like shots. Yes, they hurt.
And
even when you do the nerve blocks, there's a certain amount of, quote, discomfort.
Absolutely.
When a doctor says discomfort, it means it hurts.
So
the number of shots we had to give people made it not as popular as we'd like it to be, because you get good results, but it hurt.
Right.
But now with the new laser, it makes little tiny micro grooves with no pain.
No pain.
No pain at all.
That is the biggest reason why we went in for this laser, even though I was reasonably sure we weren't going to invest in any more laser technology at this point in time. So the rep came by. It was amazing. He brought us the machine. We tried it on ourselves in the office. No numbing required. No pain. And then there is a serum that is placed on the scalp right after treatment. And then the patient sits in the office with an LED light on the scalp to help penetrate the serum deeper into the microtrauma that they've caused. And then the serum is all absorbed through. And then they come back for another visit four weeks later.
So the joy here is, we continue to get the good results we used to get.
Without pain.
But without the pain.
Yes.
Faster. It's faster, but again, without the pain.
Yes,
and that's why people didn't want to do it.
Exactly. Without the pain. Yeah. That's the big key.
I'm a wuss. I don't want to get hurt.
Nobody wants to get pain hurt. Injection.
Yeah. Well, there are a few, but we're kind of weird.
Nobody wants to get hurt. So that said, if you are experiencing scalp hair loss, and if you are looking for some help with that, we do have a program.
Yep.
We have revamped our older program. We have some shampoos. We have some skin treatments for the scalp. We have some prescription medications you'll apply on the scalp. And then you'll come in for your treatments with the serum that will help with the penetration. And it's no pain. The big deal is there's no pain.
Yep.
Very good.
So just wanted to get that out there.
All right. Okay. Yeah, that's something we can talk into a little bit more. All right. So the phones are working and we have a bunch of calls. Our producer's like, the phones just blew up. So yes, we're going to talk.
I'm glad I got that in about the machine.
I was just noticing that she's still caught up with the bomb cycle.
Bombs have blew
Everything
up.
Blew up.
Our callers have blown in from all over Western Washington. We're going to head to Stanwood first. We have Sunny on the line. Welcome to the show, Sunny.
Hello, Sunny, and I love your name considering the recent weather.
Good morning.
How can we help?
I wish I could change the weather, but
it's okay. You be a sunny young lady and just smile at us. We'll be happy.
Okay. Well, I'll pretend to be young.
Go ahead. How can we help?
My question is about melatonin. I recently listened to a podcast, and the guy was saying that too much melatonin, if you work the night shift and you don't get out in the sunshine, your melatonin level is higher, and that will have a negative effect on testosterone. And my husband works the night shift, so I'm just wondering what your take is on that.
Okay.
Well, first of all, you know, melatonin levels actually drop when there is light. Even at night, when you are sleeping, when natural melatonin is at its peak, if you put the light on to go to the bathroom, that melatonin level will drop. That's why it's so hard to measure it, because when every time we tell our patients, spit at night so that we can measure your melatonin level, they put the light on and the melatonin level falls. Yes. So, light will lower natural melatonin production, but you're absolutely right in that shift workers have the hardest time in regulating melatonin production.
They do, and in part it's because their light-dark cycles are bad. Even people who work at night almost never work in the dark. They turn the lights on.
Of course, yes. Yeah.
So they're getting light at night, and then it's daytime in the daytime.
Right.
And so we don't get our normal cycle.
Right.
And even guys who are sleeping in the daytime, very few people have a room that will really get dark.
Yeah.
It gets dim because you put up the curtains and the shades, but it doesn't really get dark. So you're not light deprived.
Right. And then you don't get that, you know, 7-8 hours of darkness during the daytime that you do normally at night.
Right. So, yeah, it's never an actual reversal. And so what you've really done is screw up your circadian rhythm.
Oh, boy.
Completely. By having light in the day and at night. So, unfortunately, shift workers do have lower testosterone than people who work in the daytime. Although, the differential is getting less over the decades. It's kind of interesting. Men's testosterone peaked in the early 1960s. And it's been declining ever since. Every decade, there has been a continued drop in men's testosterone. And we now are seeing men in their 30s that are having testosterone levels that we would have seen in their 50s and 60s back in the 1960s. Mm. And so the question is, why are men in the 21st century such low testosterone creatures compared to men in previous years? Mm. And we don't really know what it is.
Right.
It may in part be the higher body fat, because men are fatter today than they were in the 60s. It may be the lack of physical activity, because we have more sedentary lives than we had back in the 60s. Some people are attributing it to things like the microplastics in our environment or the xenoestrogens in our foods and stuff.
Yeah.
It could be any or all of the above,
right?
In some combination. But for reasons we don't understand, testosterone levels are much lower now than they were a generation or two ago. The question is, what are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
And let's address that when we get back after the break.
Yeah. Stay right there with us, Sunny, okay? And Michael, okay. Carl, and Kay, you hang on as well. We'll get to your questions. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back if you'd like to get through on the phone. 1-800-465-8770 is the number, and we'll be right back. More Leading Edge Medicine. So glad that you're here this morning. We're talking with Sunny in Stanwood. All right, doctors, continuing to talk about melatonin and how that affects the sex hormones.
Well, it affects more than sex hormones, actually. Melatonin is a potent anti-cancer.
Yes, it is.
It has a big impact on our immune system, and it's a large part of our healing and repairing in the night.
Yeah.
It's part of the restorative function of sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, how much melatonin is he making and how much of his sex hormones are being impacted? How low are they going and are they interfering with his life?
Mm-hmm.
So let's ask a couple of questions. is your husband overweight?
No, I mean, maybe 5 pounds, maybe 10, but it varies. But yeah, he's in fair shape.
Good. Mm-hmm. Okay. Is he on a physical activity, exercise sort of program? Does he go to the gym, or is he a runner, a bicycler, or something that keeps him busy?
No, not really. Not okay. Just some walking, not much else.
All right.
And he has been taking melatonin at night, but now he's like, well, maybe I shouldn't.
No, you should.
Well, he's a shift worker.
Yeah. So I'm saying when she said night, I interpret it as his night.
He sleeps.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, his sleep cycle.
Yes. He should take some melatonin when he sleeps. Yes.
That's right. Yeah. So for the period he's using for sleep, he should be taking melatonin. How much is he taking?
2.5 milligrams.
Okay. So a fairly modest dose. All right. If I were working shifts, I would be playing with my melatonin dose a bit to see how much I could take without getting sleep disruption. You know, melatonin is kind of interesting in that it does help us to settle down and go to sleep. But if our levels are too high, then it actually disrupts our sleep. Yes. It makes your dreams so vivid that they wake you up.
Yes.
You can't get rest. On the other hand, the higher the level of melatonin, the more growth hormone you produce in your sleep. So the statistics are showing people that will tolerate 10 milligrams of melatonin at bedtime or above actually double their growth hormone production.
Wow.
Which means they heal and repair better. But some folks don't tolerate anywhere near that.
Right.
Yeah, we kind of got bit by that when we were designing our sleep supplement. I put a couple, 2 or 3 milligrams of melatonin in it. I forget which it was. And one of our marketing guys, his wife had insomnia, so she took it. She fell right asleep. But she woke up in the middle of the night having, she said, very violent dreams, and it was actually acting out her dreams. It triggered vivid dreams and sleepwalking.
Wow. So this is with a 2 or 3 milligram dose.
That was
the
3 milligram dose in that particular woman.
Yeah.
Okay. And so on the other hand, I take 10 every night because I want to kick up my growth hormone production as high as practical.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't disturb your sleep. You don't get any vivid dreams.
I have vivid, very pleasant dreams. You know, I never have nightmares. Huh. I have very vivid, colorful dreams that I enjoy. Mm. So it's fine with me. It doesn't bother me in the least.
Okay. And you're not groggy when you wake up in the morning?
Nope. I'm up at 5 o'clock and ready to go.
Okay.
And you remember your dreams probably for a little
while. I remember my dreams because they are vivid and pleasant.
Right.
Yeah.
So, Sunny, what Dr. Mixon is saying, maybe you can try to see if he can do a 0.5 milligram more and see if that improves his sleep cycle. It puts him into deeper sleep. He gets more restful sleep without vivid dreams disrupting his sleep. And that might actually improve his growth hormone production, which will then help improve his downstream hormones.
That's right.
Yeah. Is that helpful for you, Sunny?
Sure. Sure. Yeah. And what about sunshine? Is that a helpful
except for the skin cancer.
Testosterone or melatonin regulation or whatever?
Well, if you're sunshine for several hours in the day and then you go into the dark, that actually triggers better melatonin production. So bright in the day and dark in the night. And, of course, in your husband's shift work, it would be bright in the morning. And then when he goes to bed, for whatever his sleep cycle is, get him in as dark a room as possible. So really put up some light blocking shades. He needs dark to really produce that melatonin.
Mm. And so, like you're saying, even the littlest amount of light can be disruptive. Then maybe there shouldn't be a night light in the room either. Like, because there's one of those motion lights. Like, if you move, it comes on.
Yeah. The problem with those is, again, you damp down your melatonin levels when you take the light. Unless, of course, you've taken melatonin pills, and the light can't affect that. You've actually taken a pill. It's you forced it into your system, and you're not depending on yourself to produce it.
Right.
Okay, we'll get rid of the nightlight anyway.
All right, yeah. Well, you know, the problem with men, of course, especially if they're reaching age, they need to get up in the night to pee. Going to pee in a totally dark bathroom, you're liable to need to clean around the toilet in the morning.
If he doesn't, yeah.
Sure.
Because it's hard to aim properly in the dark.
There you go. Oh, Sunny, thank you so much for the call.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Take care, Sunny. Bye-bye.
Very good. All right. We're going to head to Seattle now. Michael is on the line. Hi there, Michael. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine.
Hi there. Hello.
Hi there.
Thanks for doing what you guys do. You know, sadly, more and more younger women are getting breast cancer. We've had a few friends in our, sadly, in our family have had that. But in all cases, after their surgery or and then a long course of chemo, they're put on estrogen suppressors. And does that make sense in all cases if estrogen is protective of cancers?
Well, and that's the problem we've got.
Yeah.
We don't really want to turn off her estrogen. We want to turn off the tumor's estrogen. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because a breast cancer used to be healthy breast tissue that mutated. It reacted to the lack of estrogens and testosterone and progesterone, but it reacted to the lack of the sex hormones by mutating so that it now makes its own hormones and its own growth factors. Okay. And we would now love to turn off the hormone production and the growth factor production in the tumor, but we don't know how to just turn it off in the tumor. So what we end up doing is giving the woman a drug that turns it off everywhere in her body. But that means we've turned it off in her brain, and so she starts getting memory and cognitive issues. We turn it off in her bones, and so her bones start thinning out faster. We turn it off in her skin, so she looks old much quicker.
Yeah, so after a woman's had her diagnosis of breast cancer and she undergoes either a lumpectomy or whatever surgery they deem that is necessary, and then maybe chemo or radiation, then the goal is to try to keep the estrogen level as low as possible systemically so she doesn't get a recurrence.
Right.
And that's the reason they give her estrogen blockers. Yeah. They cannot block it locally where she might get. So if they did a lumpectomy, she still has the other breast and the remaining breast tissue on the side of the cancer. And they don't want to get a recurrence there. But because they can't block it just there, they have to then block it systemically.
But a compromise and a paper I just sent out to a patient yesterday, because he wrote us an email about his wife and so on. I sent a copy of one of the Glaser papers in which they gave both an estrogen blocker and testosterone.
In the breast tissue.
Right. And the testosterone shrinks up the tumors, helps prevent the tumors from growing, and the estrogen blockers, but then she also gets the systemic impact of the testosterone, and that her brain wakes up, she feels more awake and more alert, she gets rid of the hot flashes, her bones are now making new bone, and so using testosterone with an estrogen blocker seems to be a good way to go in these ladies.
Yeah. And also, you know, we don't know all the details and the genetic history about the cancers in the women in your family, sir. But what happens is some women are able to take testosterone systemically a year or two or three down the road. But the oncologist must approve that.
Yep.
And testosterone in and of itself will help mitigate some of the side effects of the estrogen blocker that she is taking.
In fact, most of the side effects.
Now, what about the situation, though? What if the tumor is non-estrogen sensitive?
Those are the worst tumors.
Are they all, after the surgery or removal, assumed to be estrogen sensitive?
No, what they do is they look at the estrogen receptors in the tumor. And estrogen receptor and progesterone receptor right. negative tumors tend to be the most aggressive, fastest growing, most dangerous tumors.
The negative tumors.
Yeah. So the triple negative, if they don't respond to any of the sex hormones, then those are really nasty tumors.
Okay. So in all cases, the estrogen suppression after the chemo removal and chemo would be indicated.
It's generally what's being done, at least for a period of time.
Right. It used to be 5 years. Now they've increased it to 7 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. I was curious about that and appreciate your help. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're welcome, sir. Bye-bye.
Good luck. It's a difficult problem.
It really is. And although I was just reading an article about a new breast cancer vaccine that's being worked on.
Oh, wow.
Specifically for triple negative tumors.
Yeah, I've heard rumblings about this at the North American Menopause Society meeting over the years.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was still very early.
Yeah, well, apparently they're in early beta tests.
Yeah.
Proof of concept. So we may actually have a vaccine before too many more years that is aimed directly at the triple negative, most dangerous tumors.
That would be nice.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
All right. Taking a quick break. We'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine and more of your questions. If you have a question for the doctors, call now to get into the call queue. 1-800-465-8770. Kay, you're next. We'll talk to you right after the break. The Dancing Raisins. We heard it through the grapevine. Welcome back, Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette here with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat today answering your questions, talking about health and some new things in health as well. We are going to talk to, we're going to go to Graham. We have Kay on the line. Hi, Kay.
Hello, Kay.
Good morning, doctors. Could you talk about high hematocrit from testosterone therapy? And what you might be able to do about that?
Sure. You want to start or should I?
Sure, absolutely. So the mechanism of action is that testosterone stimulates bone marrow to make more red blood cells. And when that happens, its benefit is that it prevents and protects people from getting anemic. Old people do have a thing called anemia of chronic disease or anemia of old age. So it actually provides more oxygen carrying capacity. That's the way it provides more energy and more stamina. However, if it is overcorrected and there is a lot of red blood cell formation, then that's called heme concentration, which then makes more production of cells, which makes it sluggish for the blood to flow through your system, which unfortunately increases your risk for stroke. And so that is the simple explanation. It is caused by testosterone, and when it is overcorrected and when it is really high. And some people are prone to it, and when they don't wash the cream off, that's what happens. And sometimes when you use pellets, that's a very common side effect with pellet therapy, because now you're exposed to constant testosterone with no cycling of it. It's always running high. It's stimulating the bone marrow, and the red blood cell production is increasing and increasing, and that risk increases with it.
Yeah. Well, one thing I'm going to add to that, you did a great job. Thank you, ma'am, is that testosterone rescues the stem cells in the bone marrow.
Mm-hmm.
And so it actually gives you better active stem cells in the bone marrow. You know, the stem cells are the cells that are the progenitors that allow us to grow new tissue. And so it's really important to get those stem cells. But when you've got lots and lots of stem cells helping you to grow lots and lots of new tissue, you can end up making more red blood cells. So I just took it back one more step. That's all.
More to the origins.
More to the origins. I always like to look at the underlying cause as much as I possibly can.
Right.
You know, most of the time, the slight increase in hematocrit with testosterone is a benefit.
Yeah.
It, for most people, provides better, you know, better oxygen carrying capacity. They are able to do more exercise, be more awake and alert, and do better stuff. It's just that some people overdo, and the hematocrit will get so high that we, you know, we worry about stroke risk, in which case we cut their dose or remind them to cycle, wash it off before you go to bed at night, which if you're on things like the pellets, you can't, of course.
Correct.
Does that answer your question?
And also sometimes I find that the injections are pose a risk too because they go super physiologically high levels.
Yes.
So, you know, hormone replacement therapy, you have to be careful how you do it because it's not all the same.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, Dr. Mixon's four rules of medicine always apply. Okay. First rule of medicine, anything strong enough to help is strong enough to hurt. There's a downside to every decision we make in medicine. Second rule, the proper dose of anything is just enough to do the job, which is what we're talking about here. The third rule, if you don't measure, you don't know, which is why we measure your hemoglobin, hematocrit every 3 months when you come in for to your visits for the doctor. And then the fourth rule, which is the one I hate, you can do everything right and things can still go to hell. There's just a degree of chance in this universe. So we don't always win. What we do want to do is shift the odds in our favor as far as we can. I'm sorry. Go ahead, dear.
Okay. What would you consider a too high level? And then secondly, is blood blood donating of any help to that?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. In fact, that is the cure for people that chronically run high hemoglobin or hematocrit. We are very comfortable till you get up to somewhere in the low 50s.
Yeah, 50%, 51%, now you're climbing it.
Yeah.
And then actually you have to be very careful because if you cross a barrier, a threshold around 52%, I think it is, then you cannot even donate blood. The lab won't let you.
It. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's kind of odd. Okay. The blood banks are happy to take your blood unless you have too much of it. And then they won't. So yeah, if it's when guys get up around 50, we usually tell them, hey, it's a good idea to go donate blood. You're doing a social service. Somebody else will really want those extra red cells you've made, and it'll bring yours down into the, you know, mid 40s, get you down around 45, 46, which is a really nice place to be. And then we'll watch you. And if you go too high, we'll send you off to donate blood again. Mm-hmm. Answer your question.
Okay, great. Yep, that answers my question. Thank you so much.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for the call, Kay. We're going to continue.
And you know, we never see this problem in women. We only see this problem in men. Just because the concentration of the hormone is so much higher.
Yes.
In women, of course, the little bit of rise in her hematocrit is really beneficial for her.
Yes, because women tend to be a bit anemic to start with.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, we correct their anemia.
So they feel more energized.
All right. We're going to take another phone call here. Phone lines are wide open for you. If you'd like to call and be part of our show today, please give us a call today at 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. And we'll get you right in. All right. Phone lines are open for you. We are headed over to talk with Carl. Carl from Houston. Oh, and doctors, he wants to talk about The cold plunge.
In Texas, when it's so hot in Texas, a cold shower is a good idea.
Yes.
Well, not right now.
It's not that warm right now in Texas.
Late November in Texas.
That's right. Welcome, Carl. Yeah.
Thank
How
you.
Can we help?
Before we get to that, based on what Dr. Mixon was saying about melatonin, is that considered a dietary supplement and therefore totally unregulated?
Yes.
Okay, so what I'm wondering is a guide to a reliable brand. For example, what brand do you take, and is it a national brand, doctor?
It's the Longevity Medical brand that we have made specifically for our clinic.
Oh. Yeah. So I mean, get it from you guys.
Yep, yep. You can go to our website and order it. Yeah, let me explain a little bit about why that brand even exists. Okay. Back in 1997, when I first opened this clinic, I used to give the patients a list of the supplements I wanted them to take. I thought it was kind of low class for doctors to be selling stuff. You know, I wanted to take the high road. So I made no profit off any of their supplements. I just gave them a list and said, go take all of this. Well, it turns out that they didn't make exactly what I wanted people to have. And so they ended up getting mixtures that had what I wanted, but a whole lot of stuff I didn't want them to take. And people were spending $300-$500 a month on supplements and taking stuff I didn't want. And then I saw an article where they had actually gone through, pulled supplements off the shelves of retail stores and analyzed the supplement. And what was on the label and what was the amount of the actual chemical in the supplement was totally disconnected from each other. Mm. And so I said, well, golly, if I tell somebody I want them to have 100 units of something, I want them to have 100 units. And so I found a small company that would custom make our supplements for us. And the agreement I came to with them was that we were going to send every batch out to a third-party supplier, a third-party laboratory, and test it. And it had to go within 5% of the label claim. And if it varied more than 5% of the label claim, they had to remake it. Now, that meant that I was able to reject a fair number of batches, but that also meant I couldn't have the cheapest supplements around because I was shooting for the best. So when you buy melatonin from us, if it says 1 milligram, 3 milligram, 5 milligram, or 10 milligram, it should have right there because every batch has been out to a third-party lab and tested for potency to say, yes, that's what's really in this one.
Okay, and which website would that be?
lmclinic.com.
Okay, thank you for that. And about the cold plunge, Doctor, you were going to look into that, I think. So
I did. In fact, I tasked one of my physicians that has a special interest in this. because this is Nathaniel and Doc Nathaniel
Armstrong.
Nathaniel is a very, very persnickety guy. Boy, he stays in shape, he works out well, and he does cold plunges. so he pulled lots of articles for me on cold plunges. Now, I see Lynette is waving her finger in the air saying that we have to take a break. So
yes.
I'll tell you what Nathaniel found for me
when
we get back from this break.
How's
that for a tease?
That's a very good tease, Dr. Mixon. Wonderful. Leading Edge Medicine will continue. We're going to talk about the findings of the cold plunge. And is that something you should be doing for your health? Can it make a difference? We'll talk with Dr. Mixon and also Dr. Umat when we come back from this break. Phone lines are open for you. You can call us and talk with us just like Sunny and Michael, Kay, and now Carl this morning. Here's the number to get through, 1-800-465-8770. We'll be right back.